Welcome back, everybody, to OU JLIC's Shir Kali on the Parsha. It's great to be back. Sorry we had a few week break between the Chagim and then post-Chagim, so we're finally back with the beginning of the story and literally the journey of the Jewish people in Parsha Lech Lecha. And we're going to jump right into some of the overarching principles that exist beneath the surface in Parshat Lech Lecha, and also that will be guiding principles for us, honestly, for all of Chumash Bereishit. So let's jump in. Today we have both Chumashim as well as a source sheet. I want to first start with the Chumash itself and take a look together at the structure of the Parsha. In the Chumashim that are in front of you, Parshat Lech Lecha appears on page 54. And let's read the beginning together. Vayomer Hashem el Avram, lech lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladetcha u'mibeit avicha el ha'aretz asher arecha. God says to Avram to leave from his land, from his birthplace, from the house of his father, to the land that I will show you. After a long journey through Parshat Bereishit and Noach, Avram finally emerges. And again, we begin the story of the Jewish people. And this in and of itself is significant. It took a long time to find Avram Avinu. It took a long time. So much so that the Medrash emphasizes this. How many generations did it take till we get to Avram?
20.
It took us 10 from Adam to Noach, and then 10 from Noach to Avram. And the Medrash brings out the depth of this even further in source number 2 on your sheets. The pasuk you just read was source number 1. Source number 2, it says in Bereishit Rabbah, Rabbi Brechya b'shem Rabbi Nechemya Amar, that there is a mashal here. L'melech shaya over mimakom l'makom v'nafla margalit me'al rosho, that there was a king who lost a jewel from his crown. In his journeys, there was a king who lost a jewel from his crown. Amar ha'melech ve'amid pamal yeshelo v'chule. So the king goes and he gets all of his people together to go and search for this jewel that he lost. You know how long it takes? It takes 10 generations. 10 generations of sifting through the sands of history, the sands of time, generation after generation, until finally, Amru Matzah HaMelech Margalit Shelo, finally the king has found his pearl. Kach Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Nimshal in the Medrash, Mat Sorech Hayali Liaches Sham, Aparshad, Shlach, Aver, Plav, V'chulei, all the people until Avraham. What was the purpose of going through all these generations? Ela Bishvilcha, says the Medrash, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the whole reason of going through all of these 10 generations was to sift through and sift through and sift through until I found you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You being Avram Avinu. U'matzata et levavon aman lefanach, as we say every morning in Psuki de Zimra, about Avram Avinu. That finally I found he who was connected to me, who was faithful to me. I finally found Avram. I finally found what I was looking for. And so after this sifting out process, which was our little nod to the fact that we didn't have Shir Kali on Bereishit and Noach, after the sifting out process through Bereishit and Noach, we finally found that pearl that was lost in the sand. And we, at the beginning of the Parsha, start off with our final separation, the final separating out, where God turns to Avraham and says, remember the Parsha, Lech Lecha, go out, leave all of that behind you. You exist on your own, you exist uniquely. Lech Lecha mi'artzecha u'miladetcha mi'beit avicha la'artzecha, go and start the journey of the Jewish people and leave everything else behind. You've been found and now your journey begins. And it's clear here that he should leave everything behind. Nothing should go with him. That's the emphasis of the Medrash. That's the implication of the Pasuk. And it's 110% true, except that it's not. Avram, interestingly, takes something along with him in the Pasukim themselves. It's unfair to say something. It's really a someone. Who does he take along with him? Say louder. He takes Lot. Very oddly, he takes Lot. Keep looking in source number 1 or in your Chumashim. After promising the bracha that's going to come upon him for being this chosen person for following HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Pasuk Dalet, Vayelech Avraham ka'asher diber elav Hashem. As God told him, he went. Vayelech ito Lot. And Lot goes along too. We just said to separate yourself from everything from your homeland. Separate yourself from everything that was before you. It took us 10 generations after a previous 10 generations to find you. Why is Lot coming along? What's with the extra baggage? What's happening here? Avram ben Chamesh Shanim v'shivim shana b'tzito mecharan v'yikach Avram et Sarai ishto. Well, that makes sense because she's his other half. So ishto kigufo, the two of them should go together. V'et Lot ben Achiv. Why is he coming along? What is Lot doing here? Question number one that we'll have to return to and figure out. What is Lot doing here? With that premise, now let's again turn to the Chumash and let's outline what goes on further in the Parsha. After Avram goes forward and comes to Eretz Canaan, comes to Eretz Yisrael, he settles there and everything is good, and what happens next? Do you have Chumashim in front of you for a reason? Take a look at the next paragraph. Like we always look with the breaks in the Petuchot and Stumot. Your Chumashim have that in your inside. The paragraph breaks. What happens next? What's the next part of the story? There's a famine and the whole story of going down to Mitzrayim. Not so long after he lands in Eretz Canaan, after he lands in Eretz Yisrael, he immediately goes down to Mitzrayim. And there's a whole struggle over Sarai. She's taken by Paro. There's a back and forth. He then goes, he leaves with half of the loot of Mitzrayim back with him, and comes back to Eretz Yisrael. Kind of this weird sort of tangent to get us right back to where we started. Interesting, okay. What happens next? It's in the middle of a paragraph, but it's in Perek Yud Gimel. What happens next?
Well, it separates.
Lot separates, which then comes back to our original point. We just made all this fuss about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally found Abraham and he left everything behind, except he clearly needed Lot. Except, it would seem, he didn't need Lot. Because not so many psukim later, who disappears immediately? Lot! So it only enforces our question. He leaves with Lot, he goes on a tangent to Mitzrayim, and then we have the story of him separating from Lot. And it's a whole story in and of itself. It takes up a nice chunk of Pesukim. So coming back to our question of what's Lot's place in this story? Why not just leave him behind from the very beginning? Going forward, what happens next? Exactly what you would expect in Perek Yudalet. Avram Avinu, exactly as we would expect, embroils himself in the middle of a world war. That came out of nowhere. We have four kings that are fighting five kings, and there's this huge war between them that goes throughout all of the land. Avram Avinu somehow gets sucked into that war and is very much at the heart of which side of that is going to win, helping the five defeat the four. Why is Avram Avinu getting embroiled in this war? He has a Jewish people to build. What does this have to do with anything? How is this part of his journey? And then the next paragraph does actually shift us right back on track to what the journey should be. Perek Tet Vav. We have what's referred to as, what's the Hebrew term for it? Brit Ben Abitzarim. Excellent. It's okay that you said in Ashkenazis. We accept. Right? Brit Ben Abitzarim. The covenant between the parts. Does anybody know why it's called the covenant between the parts? He literally cuts animals in half and walks through them. Right. Why does he do that? So let's build up to that, which still won't help us at all, but at least understand the context. Let's build up to that. Let's take a look inside, and it's also on your source sheets, but I would recommend taking a look inside in your Chumash, but it's also in source number 3. In Pasuk Hey. Perek Tadvav Pasuk Hey. So Avram Avinu is worried. He says, you just told me to separate myself out, to go forward, to be the birth of the Jewish nation. The problem is that I can't have children. And so God says, don't worry. Pasuk Hey. Vayotzei oto achutza, he takes him outside. Vayomer habet na hashamayimah, look up at the heavens. Usfora kochavim im tuchal lisporotam. Try to count the stars if you can count them. And the rhetorical question here is, obviously you can't. Vayomer lo kol yezarecha, so too will be your children. And Avram Avinu turns around and says, V'amin ba'ashem v'yachshaveh alot tzaka. What's Avram Avinu's response in being an old man? His wife is old. They're well past childbearing years. God says, don't worry, even though it is physiologically impossible, either because of their age, or you want to go by Chazal, that starting to have a womb, He says, don't worry, you're going to have kids, and then you're going to have so many kids that down the generations you're going to have as many as the stars in the heavens. What's Abraham's response? We just read it.
Faith.
Emin Bashem. If God says so, I'm in. It's all good. I will give birth to the Jewish people. But then this discussion goes forward. Next pasuk. Pasuk Zayin. Vayomer Elav, God says to him, Ani Hashem asher otziticha mi'or kasim, I am the God who took you out of Or Kasdim. Latet lecha ta aretz azot lerishta, to give you this land to inherit it. Meaning, you will inherit this land for all generations. This is the moment of the promise to Avram and the Jewish people that the land of Israel will be ours. That it will be his and his children's. And Avram Avinu, in perfect Avram form, just like with the promise of children, says, of course, if you say so, so will it be. Except he doesn't. He says the opposite. I'm forcing you guys to actually pay attention, focus, and look at the scheme. Come on, stick with me. Look at the scheme inside. He doesn't say that at all. Vayomer. Adoni Hashem be'me'ida ki orishena. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how will I know that they're really going to inherit this land? Now this is a really odd choice from our perspective, Avraham Avinu, at the moment. God says, you're way old, and your wife can't have kids. But don't worry, you're going to have as many kids as the stars in the heavens. And Avram goes, cool, I'm in. God says, when you have those children, they will inherit the land that is literally beneath your feet right now. To which he says, give me proof of that. How do I know it's going to happen? Such an odd response. He believes in the miraculous, but he can't believe that he's going to be able to keep Eretz Yisrael? And that he would question God on such a thing? Which one is it? Is it that he has emunah on Hashem, or is it that he's asking questions on HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Which one is it, and why is he differentiating between these two cases? Very odd interaction back and forth. And then the response is even odder, coming back to your explanation of Brit Bein HaBitzarim, that is literally, as you said, the covenant between the parts. Those parts are animals. So look at God's response. Vayomer Elav. So God says, don't worry, I will make sure that you feel confident that your children are going to have this land as follows. Chali Egla Mishuleshet V'Eiz Mishuleshet V'Ayil Mishulash V'Tor V'Gozel. Take for me. Put the burden of proof on them for what these specific animals are. Take three heifers, three goats, three rams, a turtle dove, and a young dove. That's often the response that I want to hear when I'm not sure about something. Right? Pasuk Yud. Vayikach lo et kol eila v'yivatir otam batavech v'yiten ish bitro likrat re'ehu v'etatzipor lo batar. So he took all of these to him, meaning to God. He cut them in the center and placed each piece opposite his counterpart. But the birds, however, he did not cut up. And after going through, he goes into a deep sleep and he has this vision and whatever it is that his children go down to Mitzrayim and they will come back. It doesn't say Mitzrayim, but they will go down to a land that they don't know and they will come back. And then, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomer Avraham. Then he says to Avraham, Yadoa Teda. This is what we just read. Now you know by doing this that Kigeri Yezaracha be'eretz lahem v'avadum v'inu otam arba yot shana. Now you know that you're going to be a stranger in a strange land and enslaved for 400 years. V'gam et agoy esher yavdu dan anochi v'acharechin etzu brekush gadol. And I'm going to judge these people and bring them out with tremendous wealth. And that's it. And then Avraham basically concedes and says, okay, now I understand. Now I'm in. A lot of questions on this story. Again, why is he so comfortable with the miraculous promise of having children, but not sure whether or not God can give Eretz Yisrael to his children? And in what way at all, is this to our, you know, unelevated minds, I guess, voodoo-like procedure in answer to the question of how we will get Eretz Yisrael? When you look at Parsha Lech Lecha as a whole, and we're not even done with Parsha Lech Lecha, I mean, we're going to stop here. The second half of what comes next in Parsha Lech Lecha is another shir in and of itself, which we're not going to have time to do today. But even just going up to here, what's going on? So many questions. The narrative as a whole is so complex, is so rich, but is also so unclear. What's happening in this story? What's going on? Yeah. let's deal with this question of this kind of push and pull in Avraham Avinu first. Think about it with me. What's the difference between God promising Avraham that he will have children and God promising that his children will continue to inherit Eretz Yisrael? What is the fundamental difference between those two things, which immediately explains the response of Avraham Avinu?
Maybe one he can see that will come to fruition in his lifetime.
But it may not. He could say, how will I know that it's going to happen?
I'm saying he can see if it's true or not, if he'll have children.
Amin Bashem. No, he was like, no, this is going to happen. What are you going to say?
Kind of similar. I was going to say one has to do with like God being here now, and one has to do with God continuing to be involved with us throughout time.
Take it a little bit further. Develop that a little bit further, yeah?
Maybe like the first one is something that like he himself gets to merit. The other thing is something that his children have to merit, and that he's not necessarily, he has faith in his family, he doesn't necessarily have faith in his children.
Excellent. That's an incredibly important distinction. You all sort of slowly got there as a group. That was great. The promise of God to Avram that he's going to have children, of course he believes. He believes that God can do anything that he wants. And so if God says you're going to have children, he's going to have children. But God says, I promise you that your children will inherit this land. That's much more complicated. Avram says, not how do I know that you're going to do this? How do I know that they're going to merit it? Which is basically what you said. How do I know that they are going to live up to the high standards of Eretz Yisrael? How do I know that they're going to follow through on what is necessary to earn this land? To be worthy of this land? And that they won't be thrown out? How can you promise to me, God, that my children will exercise Bechira in the proper way? You can't you can't promise me that. If there's Bechira Chofshit, if there's free will in this world, you can't tell me as a fact that my children are not going to sin. They're not going to get thrown out because they're going to make mistakes. Parentheses, which we do spectacularly again and again. And we do get thrown out of the land. So the question isn't on God. The question is, I don't understand. How can you guarantee to me that my children will merit being able to stay here? Now we're still up with the huge question of how does Brit Bein HaBetarim answer that question? In order to do that, we need to examine a Ramban. An incredibly important Ramban. And a Ramban that hopefully for all of you will set the tone for how you look at Sefer Bereshit. Because it's the Ramban and he can do that for you. And it certainly will be permeating our Shirim and Shir Kali going forward. But this principle of the Ramban is a key principle to understanding everything that goes on in Sefer Bereshit. And I say that confidently because as we're about to read, the Ramban says it just as confidently, if not more so. Take a look inside with me in source number 4. The Ramban says, Omer lecha klal. I'm going to give you an overarching principle. Says the Ramban. Tavinoto bechol haparshiot habaot b'inyan Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. Understand it and how it applies to all of the coming parshiot of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. When does the story of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov end? When and give context. Where? Where and here? At the end of Bereshit, meaning this is a klal that's going to take you from now till the end of this sefer, says the Ramban. Till the very last pasuk, very literally, till the very last pasuk. And keep this in mind, says the Ramban. V'inyan gadol, and this is a very big concept, a very important concept. Haskiruhu rabotenu b'derech tzara, and our sages taught it to us in a very short line. As is their way. The Amru, and they said, Kol ma she'era la'avot, siman libanim. Everything that our avot went through, everything that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov went through, they went through it as a siman for their children. The way that later Mefarshim paraphrased this Ramban, who is paraphrasing the Medrash, is ma'aseh avot, siman libanim. That's the phrase that you either have heard before or hopefully will hear again, because it's an incredibly important concept in Sefer Bereishit. Ma'ase avot siman labanim. That whatever it is that the avot go through, what they're doing is paving the way, setting the stage for what's going to unfold in the entirety of Jewish history. Every action that they take, every move that they make in the context of this Sefer, everything we learn about them is Ma'ase Avot Siman Labanim. It's the prototype book. Sefer Bereishit is the prototype Sefer, paving the way for what all of Jewish history is going to look like. Everything that we do is a reflection of what the Avot and Imahot and the whole, all of their families, what everything happens in Sefer Bereishit, what they went through, that's what's happening. Let's keep reading a little further in the Ramban. Therefore, as we just said, and that's why this Sefer goes on and on about all of their journeys, and I think he picks the digging of the wells both because they are very significant and also because they seem insignificant. And the digging of all the wells, Ushar Mikrim, and everything else. And he warns us, one could easily think that these things are simply extraneous and they don't serve a purpose. But rather, says the Ramban, the chulam ba'im lilamed al ha'atid, they are all, every single oat, every single milah, every single word is teaching us about the future. Ki ka'ashir yavo ha'mikre lanavim mishloshet ha'avot, just as something happened to one of the, he refers to the avot here as nevi'im, one of these three nevi'im of the avot, yidbonen mimenu hadavar ha'nigzar lavo lizar'o, we should contemplate what then is going to happen to us as a people. Fast forwarding to the end of the Ramban, he brings some examples from many different psukim. V'lefichach hachaziku kadosh baruch hu et Abraham ba'aretz v'aselo dimyonot b'chol ha'atid le'asot b'zar'o. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Abraham take possession of the land and do all of these things for him, because they're preparing everything that's going to happen for the Jewish people. V'havein zeh. And understand this principle well. He keeps driving home the point. This is the underlying principle of Sefer Bereishit, Ma'ase Avot Siman Labanim. And therefore, v'ani matchil lefaresh ha'inanim b'frat ha'psukim be'ezrat Hashem. And then I'm going to use this principle to explain the rest of Sefer Bereishit. Incredible concept. Everything that happens in Sefer Bereishit is Ma'ase Avot Siman Labanim. With that perspective in mind, we're going to start to crack open these stories, even in Parshat Lech Lecha, but it's true in every Parsha going forward, and see incredibly how they're laying the groundwork for Jewish history. Let's start simply. Let's backtrack. Avinu comes to Eretz Yisrael, it's promised to him. What immediately happens after he comes to Eretz Yisrael?
Famine.
There's a famine in the land. A famine in the land that's so severe that Avraham, who is the only Jew at the time, can't sustain living in the land. And because of that famine, where does he have to go to get food? Mitzrayim. What does that sound like, oddly enough? Sound familiar?
Yaakov.
The whole Jewish people at that time, already at the end of Sefer Bereishit, a famine comes to the land, and therefore they all have to go to Mitzrayim to survive that famine. And what's the greatest test that we go through in Eretz Mitzrayim? What is the biggest force of Tum'ah that already Yosef's fighting and that all the Jewish people are fighting all throughout the beginning of Sefer Shemot? What's the biggest force there? Isha Potifar. More specific than assimilation, it's Arayot. It's Arayot. Beginning with Yosef himself being Ma'ase Avot Siman Labanim and fighting off Eshet Potifar. Therefore himself being Ma'ase Avot Siman Labanim of what we're going to have to struggle with when we go down to Mitzrayim. And if you look and examine carefully the opening of Sefer Shmot, it's all about how Bnei Yisrael paru v'yishetzu v'yirbu v'yatzu v'mod ma'od v'atmelei ha'aretz otam, the whole beginning there, and then the miyaldot, dafka miyaldot, who are protecting the Jewish babies to make sure that we produce, that it's all about this fight between an immersion in engaging in one's physical side or focusing all of one's energies only on building the future. this struggle between instant gratification and a holiness in relationships toward building the future. It's the whole beginning of Sefer Shemot is all about that, and certainly the story of Yosef and Eshet Potiphar, which is the defining moment of Yosef HaTzadik's life and gives him the title Yosef HaTzadik. So what happens in our story? Wouldn't you know it? Sarai. There's this whole struggle where Paro tries to take Sarai. And there might be a crack in the relationship between Avraham and the purity of the home of Avraham and Sarai. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu intercedes and they maintain that purity. But that is the struggle of the story. Is maintaining the purity in that land. And then struggling with Paro. And then finally being driven out of the land. Exactly like Bnei Yisrael driven out of the land. And not only exactly like they were driven out of the land, but driven out of the land with what? That's where Avraham gets all of his wealth from. They send him out with tremendous wealth. Jews who have been enslaved for hundreds of years, where did they get their wealth from when they were in the desert? They took Mitzrayim's wealth with them. You read a story like that, mamash ma'asevot siman levanim. Literally paving the way for what we're going to experience by going down to Mitzrayim because of the famine, to the difficulties we're going to go through there, to how we get out, and in what way we come out. Ma'asevot siman levanim. So now we understand already that once Avraham Avinu is established as that individual through the opening parsha of Lech Lecha, the opening paragraph of Lech Lecha, so we immediately go to set forth the journey of the Jewish people. Now, let's jump forward again. We're going to keep jumping back and forth until we pull this whole thing together. Let's come back to Brit Bein HaBetarim. Avraham Avinu says, how will I know that my children will keep this land? How can I know? I have no idea. I don't know if they're going to do good, if they're going to do bad, if they're going to marry this land, if not. Avraham doesn't know this yet. He doesn't know this yet. But in Vayikra, we're going to be told, if you do like Eretz Mitzrayim, and you do like Eretz Kanaan, and you don't live up to the Kedusha, impurity in relationships, the land will vomit you out. Those are the words of Sefer Vayikra, not my own. Whether he knows that that's the reality of Eretz Yisrael or not, he knows that Eretz Yisrael is a spiritually sensitive land. How do I know they're going to maintain here? And so God says, don't worry, cut these four animals in half and leave the dove at the end whole, and by walking through them, you will come to an understanding of how history will play out. What's happening there? What's really happening there? You see where we're going?
Maybe that, like, Avraham himself is living through everything that his children are going to be.
How so?
Well, because he went, I mean, the Yadot Tezaki, or Yezar HaFaber Atzalahem, like, this whole story happens to Avraham's personal life.
How in this procedure itself? How is this foreshadowing Jewish history? It's okay, that's what we're going to learn together. Yeah.
It seems a little reminiscent of maybe it's Ryan, how he split like the animals in half and he walked through them, and then Nesal in the future will walk through the split sea.
Interesting. Never thought about it like that. Definitely could be. We're going to focus on the four. Okay? We're going to focus on the four. For that, we're going to need a little bit of background. Let's take a look in our sheets. On source number 5, and go back to Parshat Bereshit. There's a well-known, and if you don't know it yet, you'll know it now, a well-known and very powerful medrash on the second pasuk of the Torah. The pasuk reads as follows. We'll start with the first pasuk, because why not? Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the heavens and the earth, the aretz ha'ita tohu v'avohu v'choshech al pnei tehom. The land was tohu, bohu, and there was darkness upon the surface of the deep. Ruach Elokim merachefet al panei hamayim. And the spirit of Elohim, whatever that means, was hovering above the surface of the deep. Chazal understand from this pasuk, and not just from this pasuk, from many, many, many psukim throughout Tanakh, that embedded in the very fabric of reality, there is a process the Jewish people will go through, which is the process referred to as the Arba or Dalad Galiot. That we will go through four stages of exile. And Chazal see it as being so fundamental to the history of the world that they see it embedded in the very fabric of reality from the second pasuk. It's literally woven into the fabric of reality according to this Chazal. Source number 6. That this pasuk is Kira Bagaliot. Ba'aretz Haitazo Tohu, these are the four, he's going to identify the four Galiot, which should sound familiar. Zegalut Bavel. Tohu is Bavel. That's the first Galut that we're going to experience, the Babylonian exile. Next underline, Ubohu Zogalut Madai, the Persian Median exile, which produces which story in Jewish history? Purim. That's the Persian Median exile. That's Bohu. Next underline, Vechoshech Zegalut Yavan. Darkness, that's the galus of Yavan, which is which story coming up soon? Hanukkah. And that one being the least surprising because we know that there's clearly a battle between darkness and light, and we somehow respond to the darkness of Yavan with the light of the Hanukkah candles. And that's why a lot of people bring up this midrash around Hanukkah time as well. And also because this midrash in the next line goes through more detail, interestingly, about Yavan than any other really galut that it brings up here. Next underline, Al Pnei Tahom, across the surface of the deep. Zeh galut mamlechet harasha. This is the galus of the evil kingdom, which is most often referred to in other sources as Edom, coming from Esav. Over time, many different Baalei Hashkafa have linked it to the Roman Empire and the rulership or the dominant culture of Christianity over time. Many these days would say, as we're still in that galut, that it's also Western culture might be a representation of this galut Edom. Further discussions for other times. And not so simple, but very powerful. But there are these four stages of exile, of Bavel, Prasumadai, Yavan, and Edom. And these four stages of exile, again, we often look at them as ways, and we even presented it as such not so long ago, that we keep messing up and we get thrown out. We mess up, we get thrown out. We mess up, we get thrown out. To take a moment is to recognize the seriousness of this midrash, is that it may not be so simple. It may not just be that God keeps bringing us back, and if we mess up again, he's going to throw us out again, and whoever happens to be the world power at that time, so that's what we're going to end up under. No, claims this midrash. There are four galiot, no more than four galiot. There are four galiot, and they are embedded into the fabric of reality from Bereshit, from the Haaretz Hayta Tohu Vavohu V'Choshech Al Pnei Tahom. And they're going to be in this order, in this way, to somehow produce tikkun in this world. So much so that as we take the Medrash forward, it actually identifies it as such. V'ruach Elokim Merachefet Al Pnei Hamayim. So V'ruach Elokim Merachefet, says the Midrash, Zer Rucho Shel HaMashiach. That comes after these four stages of Galut. That Ruach Al Pnei Hamayim is that Ruach Elokim is the Ruach of Mashiach. And what brings about the Ruach of Mashiach? Incredibly, the Medrash says this. You just want to sit there and like just take this Medrash in. It's incredible. What does it say? Hey, Ahmad At Amar. How is that going to happen? It says in the Basuk, V'nacha Alav Ruach Hashem, Be'ezeh Zechut. There we go. Be'ezeh Zechut Mamshechet Uva'a. In what Zechut is this going to come about when we see Mashiach? HaMarchefet Al Pnei Hamayim B'Zechut HaTshuva. Through doing tshuva. Shenim shela kemayim, because that's compared to water, and that's shene emar shekhi kemayim libech, that's al pnei hamayim. The ruach elokim olim rachefet, when there is the mayim, the water of tshuva coming out from our hearts into the world. Wow. Built into the second pasuk. Then one has to examine. Why is it this way? Why specifically are there four galuyot? Why do they go in the order of Bavel, Prasumadai, Yavan, and Edom? And to recognize that these things aren't just responses to our actions, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is setting this up, that clearly it's a process, and that each one must come one after the other, each one seemingly bringing us to a greater level of clarity to be able to produce Mashiach and Tshuva. Lot of food for thought. Nothing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does in this world is random. These exiles are intentional. These malchiyot are intentional. They have a specific number which is intentional, and they have an ultimate goal which is intentional. What is that? That's sure for another time. And if any of you want to investigate it further on your own, I would highly recommend, especially again coming up on Hanukkah, take a look at the Maharal's Ner Mitzvah, Sefer Ner Mitzvah, It's divided into two parts, but the first part takes up like 3/4 of the Sefer and has nothing overtly to do with Hanukkah. And it's his treatise on the four Galiot, why they're four, why they are what they are, why they manifest the way they do, very worthwhile to read and to learn. Ner Mitzvah, the first part of Ner Mitzvah. Mind-blowing in terms of answering these questions. But in any event, this is the way that history will play out. As such, Avraham Avinu says, how do I know that my children are going to remain on this land? God's response is very specific and comprehensive. He says, you don't know that. And I'm going to tell you something. Your children may not be remaining on this land. And they may have to go through periods of exile. But at the very least, what I can promise you is this. Even if they go through exile, they will survive those exiles. They will cut through those exiles. And they will return whole. And therefore, he has him take 4 different animals, each one of those 4 specifically reflective of its corresponding galut. He has Avinu Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim slice them in half, and has him literally, microcosmically, walk through Jewish history and step through those defeated, divided, broken malchuyot, until reaching the bird that represents Klal Yisrael that remains whole at the end. And then Avraham Avinu understands, I can't be guaranteed that my children won't sin, but God is guaranteeing me that even if they sin, and even if they're exiled, they will endure and they will return. And they will return whole. That's Brit Ben Abitarim. Now that may be true, but then one could ask, how does Avraham even know that this is going to happen? Where does he have the courage to take in, on behalf of his children, that he knows that this can happen? And the answer to that question is in the previous story. What story happens right before Brit Ben Abitarim? We went through it all together. What story happens right before Brit Ben Abitarim? The War of the Kings. Totally impossibly, oddly, without explanation, Avraham Avinu is drawn into this world war. A war between who? Four and the five. Who is Avraham Avinu fighting against? The four. Avraham Avinu just emerged right before this, embroiled in a world war against 4 kings, and overcame those 4 kings, those 4 malchuyot. He can feel confident in that because he literally already experienced the Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim of going out to war and overcoming the Dalad Malchiot themselves. And you'll say to me, very nice, Robbie, you've managed to figure out that there were 4 kings. You read the pasuk and you saw the number 4. How do I know that's connected to the Malchiot? The answer is, I have no idea. But Chazal did. And here are 2 Midrashim that do the exact same thing that we just did. Take a look inside. Source number 8. Amar Avon, Kishem Shapatach Bedalad Malchiot Kach Anu Tachatum Ela Bedalad Malchiot. Just like we open with 4 Malchiot, we end with 4 Malchiot. Ekedar La Omer Melech Elam, Vitid Al Melech Goyim, Vam Rafel Melech Shinar, Var Yoch Melech Elasar, Kach Eno Chatum Ela Bedalad Malchiot. So too we close history with 4 Malchiot, Machut Bavel, Machut Madai, Machut Yavan, Machut Adom. Completely parallel. But not only is it parallel in 4 and 4, read the next Midrash. Not just in the number, but in the actual content. Again, without explaining how, the Midrash tells us. Davar Acher, Vayibi Mi Amrafel Melech Shinar. Amrafel Melech Shinar, Zo Bavel. That's the manifestation of Bavel in this story. Var Yoch Melech Alasar, Ze Antiochus. That's the manifestation of Prasu Madai in this story. Kedar Laomer Melech Elam, Ze Madai. Sorry, I flipped them. Antiochus is Yavan, and then Kedar LaOmer then is Persia Media. That's going to be Pasu Madai. V'tid al melech koyim ze malchut adom. 2 midrashim, literally next to each other, clearly bringing out different aspects of the same thing. Not only is it 4 kings, but these 4 kings were the manifestation of the Dalad Malchiot. That's why there were 4. Incredible concept. That he literally defeated Bavel, Prasumadai, Yavan, and Edom, and through that knew by going through Brit Ben Abiturim that his children would be able to do that as well, since he said it, Maaseh Avot Siman L'Banim. Questions, comments, thought up until this point?
The examples that he's giving are examples of
Nivuot
that had like
symbolic. In that
Ramban? Yeah.
Keep reading forward in Ramban on this Parsha, and then he deals with it in the context of the stories. We can talk about it afterward, though.
Okay.
But literally throughout Parsha Lech Lecha and then onward, he stops and says, this is this, this is this, this is this.
Okay.
Yeah. We have one last outstanding question, and it was the question that we actually started with. What question haven't we answered yet?
Lot.
Here's where it all comes together. You ready? I love this shir. It's one of my favorite shirs of my Rebbe. I love this shir because it shows you what the intricacy of the structure of each parsha is. He brings Lot with him. Why does he bring Lot with him? Maaseh Avot Siman L'Banim. What function does Lot serve in the context of Jewish history? Why does he need to take Lot with him for Jewish history to come about? What's the significance of Lot? Think about it for a minute. What's the significance of Lot? How? Take it. Draw it out for me.
Because Sodom and Gomorrah destroyed, and his daughters do what they
give
do.
Birth to
Moab.
Moab gives birth to Ruth, eventually. I mean, skipping generations in between each one. Ruth, and then Ruth gives birth to David. He needs to bring Lot with him because there is no Mashiach. There's no Malchut Yisrael without Lot. He needs to bring Lot with him. Lot has to come with him. There is no Mashiach ben David. There is no Yimot Mashiach without Lot. So Lot comes with him. Lot, though, has his own complicated journey. Interestingly enough, who else has their own complicated journey in the people whose list we just mentioned? I mean, David HaMelech has an incredibly complicated life and complicated journey. That's a discussion in and of itself, why it is that Mashiach has to come through Lot and this complicated moment between Lot and his daughters that produces Moab and Ruth and David. That's in and of itself needs to be examined. But he has to go off and produce that reality. But linking into our story, Lot then goes off. What's the story that happens right after Lot goes off? Look back in your Chumashim. Lot and Avram split apart. What's the next story? In which story? We've mentioned it. We've already discussed it. What story? The four and the five kings. Why does Avraham Avinu go to war with the four and the five kings? To save Lot. Meaning that Avraham Avinu goes and fights against the four kings. Fights against the Dalud Malchiot. The process of history that he's laying forth is that the struggle over the course of history of surviving the difficulty of Galut is for what purpose? To produce Mashiach. Just like that Medrash told us. That after the Tohu, Bohu, Choshech, and Alpanei Tzahom, then Ruach Elokim Merachavet Alpanei Amayim. That it seems to be through this process of the Dalud Malchiot, that's what allows us to produce Mashiach. And so Lot not only has to come with him, but the battle against the Dalud Malchiot has to be to produce Mashiach. To save Lot, who is the bearer of Mashiach in this story. And having finally been chosen, coming to Eretz Yisrael, experiencing the source Galut, which is Galut Mitzrayim, and coming out, going and fighting the four kings, and saving Lot, who will bring about Mashiach, then finally we come to Brit Ben Abiturim, and Avinu understands. Maaseh Avot Siman L'Banim, everything that's happened to me up until now has set the stage for me to understand, to comprehend, to answer my question. B'meida, how will I know that my children will inherit this land? The answer is, you already know because you already did it. You already know because you already set the stage. That's the narrative until at least this point in Parshat Lech Lecha. That's the narrative of Parshat Lech Lecha. this gives us a framework about how to think about the Parshiot in Sefer Bereshit, about just how powerful this klal of the Ramban is of Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim. How deeply we should be relating to these stories, how seriously we should be taking these stories, how much we have to learn from these stories, and how every single thing the Avot went through with their families sets the stage for the reality that we live up until this very day. Bezrat Hashem, we should be able to live up to the Avot, we should be able to live up to the Imahot, and in doing so, successfully journey through the Dalad Malchiyot ourselves to finish this long, deep exile that was described in that Medrash Rabbah that we read together, and through that see the rise of Melech HaMashiach and Yimot HaMashiach and Tziyat HaMeitim and Mihra B'Yaminu.